Hi, my name is Laura Schultz. As I was introduced, I'm filling in for Dr. Philip Barak from the University of Wisconsin-Madison for his talk today, Recycling Post-Consumer NPK from Wastewater Back to Agriculture. In recognition of the International Year of Soil, a group of soil scientists published this paper in Science, in which they drew to our attention the fact that fertilizers are becoming quite expensive, and as fertilizer prices continue to increase, this is going to affect food sustainability and ultimately how we feed a growing population. As you can see in this graph over here, the three fertilizers they called out were superphosphate, potassium chloride, and anhydrous ammonia. And from 1961 to 2011, you can see that those prices have greatly increased. These scientists were also contacted by a news source, the Science Times, and in this article, they talked about how, as a community, we need to start viewing wastewater as something that we could start recycling nutrients from. And they brought to our attention that when we decided to start recycling paper and glass and things from that from our waste, everyone jumped on the bandwagon and that became incorporated into our society relatively quickly. And that they think that we need to start looking at wastewater as something that we could be recovering nutrients from instead of just a waste product and a nuisance. But how does this in regards to wastewater treatment facilities? Approximately 80% of the American population lives on a centralized wastewater system. And these systems treat 1 million gallons of wastewater processed daily for every 10,000 people served. In the U.S. alone, there are 15,000 wastewater treatment plants, and 90% of those are operated by cities. And of those 15,000, about 400 are associated with cities with populations greater than 100,000, and that's about 50% of the population. So when we're starting to look at wastewater treatment plants to start incorporating recovery strategies into their systems, these 400 are the ones that we should be aiming for because they are the most complicated, they have the most sophisticated machinery and equipment to handle these processes, and they deal with the largest amount of wastewater. The wastewater treatment industry refers to person equivalents of nutrients in wastewater. So every day, each one of us produces about 11 grams of nitrogen, 1.1 grams of phosphorus, and 2.7 grams of potassium. When we're looking at nitrogen, in 1 year, at the current U.S. population, wastewater treatment plants treat about 1.3 million megagrams of nitrogen. When we're comparing that with the 12 million megagrams of fertilizer nitrogen used in the U.S., the 6 million megagrams of biologically fixed nitrogen, and the 1.3 million megagrams of nitrogen recovered from manure, this wastewater nitrogen accounts for about 7% of the total U.S. nitrogen budget. But at current prices, this still has a potential of $1 billion annually. Similarly, when we're looking at P and K, for P, we have about 130,000 megagrams of phosphorus are handled at wastewater treatment plants annually. We can compare that with the amount of fertilizer used in the U.S. and the amount recovered from manure, and that accounts for about 5% of the total P budget, and at current prices, that would equal about $400 million annually. When we're looking at potassium, we have about 320,000 megagrams of potassium are treated at wastewater treatment facilities, and that would equal about 6% of the total potassium budget, with an annual income of $380 million. So these aren't just pennies we're talking about. We're flushing quite large sums of potential revenue down our toilets every day. I know many of you do not work with wastewater treatment facilities, so we thought it was very important to go over a brief summary of how they work. So your wastewater goes from your home and your industries, and when it gets to your wastewater treatment facility, the first thing that happens is they have a bar screen, and that removes any garbage or large objects that have ended up in the sewage. That then goes to a grit tank where the water is slowed down to allow sand and grit and other particles to settle out and be collected. In your settling tank, you have your solid particles settle to the bottom, and those go to your anaerobic digester, where your water is then brought onto your aeration tank, and your fats and your oils and your greases accumulate on top. In your aeration tanks, you have microorganisms breaking down the nutrients in the water, and you also have your microorganisms are converting that ammonia that you have in your urine into nitrate. And then if you have denitrifying conditions present, that nitrate will convert to nitrogen gas and be released to the atmosphere. The primary purpose of your clarifier is to allow your microorganisms that were in their aeration tank to settle out, and then those microorganisms are sent along to the anaerobic digester. And your water that's in your clarifier is then cleaned by either chlorine or UV light and then released to the environment. Your anaerobic digester, the biosolids that are digested in there, are typically dried and then hauled off-site, and about 50% of the biosolids in the U.S. are applied to agriculture, but they are also incinerated or put into landfills. When we're looking at the typical wastewater that wastewater treatment plants have to deal with daily, these are some of their typical characteristics. Your pH is relatively neutral. Your total nitrogen is about 24 parts per million, and your total phosphorus is about 5.7 parts per million. And you have a flow rate of 160 gallons per person equivalent. There are currently two main methods used to remove nitrogen from wastewater. The first is a denitrification process, and this process treats about 50 to 60% of the nitrogen that a wastewater treatment plant receives. In this process, you have your microorganisms convert your ammonium to your nitrate. And then you have denitrifying bacteria that convert nitrate to nitrogen gas, and then that is released to the atmosphere. It's really important to note, though, that about 3% of this gas is nitrous oxide, and that is a very potent greenhouse gas that they are releasing to the atmosphere. In these situations, when you have carbon sources are limiting for your microorganisms, plants typically add methanol to help increase their efficiency. Another process that is relatively new is the Sharon-Anamox process. And in this situation, you have your Sharon chemicals, and those convert, or the Sharon process, and that uses the temperature differentiation to stop the conversion of nitrate. It keeps it right at nitrite. It does not allow it to go to nitrate, excuse me. And then your Anamox converts your nitrite directly to nitrogen gas, and then that is released to the atmosphere. But it's really important to note that this process typically works best on wastewater streams where the ammonium concentration is relatively concentrated, and that's usually about 1,000 parts per million. When we're looking at the energy costs of nitrogen removal from wastewater, here we're going to define it as megajoules per kilogram of nitrogen recovered. And we define that in three main components. You have your electrical cost, your chemical cost, and then your total cost. And your total cost includes your electrical, your chemical, and it also includes the conversion efficiency of primary energy to electrical in a standard mix. And here we assume that to be about 31%. So you can see the total cost of nitrification, denitrification process. Most of that electrical cost is associated with aeration processes and pumping processes. And when you have to add your methanol to the mix, you'd have quite a large chemical cost that's associated with this process. There are a few methods that are currently being considered for nitrogen recovery from wastewater, but currently they are rarely used. The first is producing struvite. And struvite is an ammonium magnesium phosphate mineral. And in this process, you would add a magnesium salt and phosphate to cause this mineral to precipitate, and then you would collect that, and then you could ship that off-site as a fertilizer. And this mineral is about 5.7% nitrogen by weight. Another process is ammonium stripping. And in this situation, you add calcium oxide to your solution to increase the pH to promote ammonia volatilization, and then that ammonia gas is passed through sulfuric acid producing ammonium sulfate. Last, a relatively new process is considering using electrodialysis to accumulate ammonium, and in this situation you're using electrical field to cause ammonia to accumulate in one stream, Then that stream, the ammonia can be removed by either stripping it or sparging or even a precipitation process. When we're looking at the energy costs associated with these processes, the costs are relatively high for struvite recovery and ammonia stripping, but the projected costs for electrodialysis are significantly lower, and this electrical cost that we have in particular might even be lower for electrodialysis if you can employ some of the biogas that is generated at a wastewater facility instead of using all electrical power. It's really important when you're trying to sell a recovery process to consider how much the energy costs compared to what it would cost if you're creating ammonium fertilizer via the standard methods or the Haber-Bosch process. So if we look at these total energy costs, you can see that ammonia and urea are significantly less compared to struvite recovery and ammonia stripping, but potentially your electrodialysis could be much cheaper, suggesting that this might be a route for wastewater treatment plants to consider recovering ammonia from their wastewater. There are two main methods being considered right now for phosphorus recovery from wastewater, and they both employ precipitating out a phosphorus mineral. The first one is struvite, which we talked about during ammonia recovery. But when your main goal is to remove phosphate instead of nitrogen, you don't typically have to add ammonium to the system to cause this to precipitate, because your ammonium is usually not limiting. And so you would just have to add your magnesium oxide. But it's very important that your phosphorus is soluble, and the way to increase solubility is to have your phosphorus undergo some type of digestion. And in these systems, they're proposing to use an anaerobic digestion where you would have a soluble phosphorus about 100 to 200 parts per million, which would be about 20 to 40% of the phosphorus in your digest. Another mineral that they are looking at removing from wastewater is brushite. And brushite is a calcium phosphate mineral. So in this case, you would be adding a calcium hydroxide to cause the phosphorus to precipitate. In this system, they typically use an organic acid digest, which has a very low pH, somewhere between 4.8 and 6, and a very high soluble phosphorus concentration, about 700 to 15,000 parts per million. So this would be about 60 to 80% of the total phosphorus in a digest. And this would contain about 18% phosphorus by weight. Wastewater treatment facilities have two main phosphorus removal strategies that they currently employ. The first is phosphorus precipitation with ferric sulfate, and the other is enhanced biological phosphorus removal. When we compare those two processes with the energy costs associated with struvite recovery and brushite recovery, we see that they are relatively in line with each other, suggesting that it is just as energy efficient to recover the phosphorus as it is to remove it. And when we compare this with the energy costs of that of creating triple superphosphate from rock phosphate, you see that the costs are actually cheaper than it would be to create this phosphorus from virgin materials. So we've spent a great portion of this talk talking about nitrogen and phosphorus, but what about potassium? Like phosphate, potassium is mined from the Earth's crust from evaporates of H and C beds. But about 90% of the potassium that enters a wastewater treatment facility will be discarded into the wastewaters and into the environment. And this is because, unlike nitrogen and phosphorus, potassium, there is no simple chemical that you can add to the wastewater to cause the potassium to precipitate out, except for very exotic chelating agents. So everyone is very concerned about peak phosphate and what are we doing when the rock phosphate reserves run out. In 2010, it was projected that the rock phosphate reserves were going to run out in about 100 years, but they have recently reevaluated it and found that they will run out in about 300 years. So neither is ideal, but we do have a little more wiggle room. So when we're looking at potash reserves, the reserves are currently estimated to be about 100 years supply. So this is suggesting that potassium recovery is almost even more important than phosphorus recovery because our reserves are running out faster. So in conclusion, as the human population continues to grow, the demand for sustainable fertilizers will continue to increase in order to support greater agricultural productivity. Recovering NPK from wastewater is one method to partially address global environmental limits. The value of NPK entering wastewater treatment plants totals $1.75 billion annually in the U.S., but they are mostly handled as a nuisance or a contaminant. Emerging technologies may be able to recover nutrients from wastewater, but costs of production must be more energy efficient than virgin materials. And the greatest economic value is in nitrogen recovery. The closest at hand technologically is phosphorus recovery, and the greatest need is potassium recovery. And in full disclosure, I work with the Barack Lab at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and in conjunction with their spin-off company, Nutrient Recovery and Upcycling, we are currently working on a brushite recovery strategy. We are also working on using electrodialysis to recover ammonium from wastewater, and we are hoping to begin exploring potassium soon. So with that, I'd like to say thank you, and below is the email of the PI who was supposed to be here today. But thank you for your patience. Thank you.